Welcome to the Product Development Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Wakeling, a product manager passionate about enriching my own understanding of how great products are made. This podcast starts conversations with not only other product managers, but stakeholders across the business to provide unique perspectives on the full product development process, from marketing and sales to engineering and leadership. You are my welcome guest on this journey as well, and I hope you get as much out of these conversations as I do. If you enjoy this episode, please make sure to give a like and a review on your preferred podcast platform and share with your colleagues. It's really appreciated and helps ensure the future of this podcast. In this episode, I speak to Tom Merrifield, founder of Thoughtful Marketing, where he looks to help organizations with their SEO, Google Ads, and website improvement requirements. He has a background in both product management and marketing. Tom, thank you very much for joining the podcast.
Thanks very much for inviting me on.
I'm very excited to pick your brains about the fascinating and somewhat elusive world, I guess, of SEO. So what ended up pushing you towards this particular niche?
Yeah, it's a good question. So by trade, I am a marketing manager. I've had approximately 20 years experience client side. SEO was usually part of my role, albeit smaller at the beginning. I spent around a decade with a large corporate. I'm working in a multinational role, and there I got to work with the corporate HQ and also the EMEA and APAC markets on encouraging best practice in terms of SEO and PPC. So that's where I really got the bug. So I spent several years doing that before branching out and then offering consultancy. SEO is ever evolving. It's incredibly exciting. It's incredibly rewarding because if you do lots and lots of the right things, more often than not, you will see the results of that. It's quantifiable. There's also softer kind of marketing elements to it as well to complement the sort of data analysis that you need to undertake. So that's really how I got into it in a nutshell. I learn all of the time. I think everybody in this industry does. But some of the fundamental principles remain very much the same as they were perhaps 5 or 10 years ago.
What sort of companies do you tend to work with? Is it the smaller organizations? Is it the bigger organizations? Maybe you can talk us through what your typical client might look like.
Yeah, so generally SMEs. I've got a real mix. I do work with national charities. I work with a couple of digital agencies, both with their clients and I'm working to support their direct SEO and PPC efforts. I have the pleasure of working with publishers. I'm not in a particular niche, but I think that benefits me and benefits many of my clients in the respect that I can learn from a particular industry and sometimes take those learnings and sort of cross-pollinate that to another, to completely different sector. So a real mixed bunch. I'm generally working with marketing directors, heads of marketing, marketing managers. And again, my sort of client-side experience from all those years really, I think, helps translate sometimes complex technical issues or complex SEO-related issues into a language that those stakeholders can understand and can feedback to their particular stakeholders.
Is there a lot of crossover between the different types of organizations you deal with? Is there, a framework that you leverage, maybe particularly in the early stages of working with an organization?
Yeah, so it's important in the respect of understanding what those the organization's objectives are, first and foremost. Some of the constraints in terms of what they can and can't do, that might sometimes be budget related. It might be a case that they've got a new site, a relatively new site that can't change too much and in its early life. So getting a real understanding of that client and where they want to go is very, very important. And that applies to whichever particular sector I'm working in. And then a very common approach that I take is to audit a site when I'm starting to work with a client, because often you never know quite the extent of any issues that there might be out there until you take that holistic picture, until you thoroughly look into the technical on-page and off-page situation of that particular site. So taking that perspective at the beginning is usually a really good first move and is something I do more often than not.
So maybe you can take us through maybe what that audit typically looks like.
Yeah, sure. So SEO changes all of the time, of course. But as I mentioned before, the fundamentals generally remain the same. So there's, of course, three main pillars to SEO, if you like: technical, on-page and off-page. So as part of an audit, we'd look at aspects from a technical perspective first and foremost, because if you haven't got the foundations in place, then whatever you do in terms of on-page, you can create great content, you can work on PR strategies, you can attract backlinks, etc. But if you're undermined by technical aspects, then that's always going to hold you back, and you'll never fulfil your full potential. So looking into technical aspects, then there's the obvious ones, sort of page load, etc., etc. But some of the less obvious ones that can cause a great many issues is things like index bloat. So if you imagine your site as a pie chart, you might think that 50% of your pages are strong or reasonable, another 25% of your pages are okay, and you might suspect that there's 25% of pages with an issue. However, it might be, and I've had this with multiple clients, is they don't actually realise that Google has accidentally indexed thousands upon thousands sometimes of zombie pages, low quality pages, etc. And unfortunately, Google takes into account the entirety of your index pages and often ranks you accordingly. So it's firstly important to make sure that those aren't those kind of aspects affecting your site. So that's from a technical perspective. Then it's looking at the on-page content. And again, even though there might not be technical issues, you might have a lot of thin content. You might have content that is duplicated. You might have pages that are competing for the same search term. So, and that can cause cannibalization. So, for example, I'm just looking at my desk here. If you sold pens and pencils, you want ideally one page to be ranking for pens and all of the associated terms, and likewise one page ranking for all of the associated pencil terms. You don't want to mix the two much, and crucially, what you don't want is multiple pages competing for pens, and there's various reasons why you wouldn't want that to happen. So undertaking as part of a general audit, a content audit, enables you to look at all of this nuance and then decide whether you've got content that isn't performing, that is cannibalizing other particular pages, and various other aspects to boot. So that's the kind of second part of the pillar. And then thirdly, looking at things like backlinks. Have you got enough backlinks? Are they of a high enough quality? Often what will happen, especially with more mature sites that have been, or more mature domains, should I say, that have been going for many, many years, is that you acquire backlinks, you then delete a particular page. Of course, that creates a 404 error, but often that isn't redirected to a similar or identical page. So you lose a lot of the benefits of those backlinks over a period of time. And sometimes some clients will have hundreds, if not thousands, of those that they need to ideally, more often than not, see if they can plug back into a relevant page that's still live.
So apart from backlinks, which are obviously very desirable, a lot of companies want to rank for certain keywords and sometimes very specific and very generic keywords as well. A lot of big organizations, particularly, let's say, news organizations that have very strong domain authority already, they rank very highly. So how do you go about trying to compete for these high volume search terms? What is it that the big companies are doing?
There's probably about 200 ways in which they do that. Generally, Google, historically, it was thought that Google had over 200 ranking factors. It's argued that, these days it's much more nuanced, and there's multiple factors even beyond those 200. So I'll focus on the cannibalization bit, if I may, because there's lots of things that if I address very briefly the broad question of how they rank, the age of the domain, the quality of backlinks, it's those three pillars. Technically they're sound. On page they have content that is as good, if not better, than the competition. And from an off-page perspective, they have built up brand trust, they've got a social presence, they've got a high number of quality backlinks. So those are the three things in essence that put them towards the top of the pile, if you like. And certainly for the example you gave there, it is highly competitive. So you need to be on top of your game in all three of those respects. With regards to cannibalization, you can tie yourself up in knots too much by being concerned about cannibalization. So it shouldn't be something that you become obsessive about. Two tools that I'd recommend in that respect is pulling the data from Google Search Console. So you can draw down the data, look at the particular pages that are competing for particular search terms, and decide whether you have an issue or not. Obviously, another aspect is to then marry that data up with Google Analytics.
to look at things like dwell times, bounce rates, etc. Is the user being served by Google the desired page? And if it's not, and if you're seeing high bounce rates, low dwell times, then you certainly need to address that, because again, Google wants to deliver a high quality user experience. Understandably, that's what the whole business model is on. So it's really, really important that you serve pages on a consistent basis, which are engaging and sustain the visitor's interest.
I guess that's why it's particularly difficult for smaller companies or startups, particularly in, I guess, content writing and news, to really compete on the same playing field as the big organizations out there, because of the natural advantage they have in terms of already big social reach and big natural organic traffic, which comes through brand recognition or whatever else.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I always say organic traffic is free traffic that costs money.
Yes, I think that's a very good way to put it. I think in light of that, it shows you the natural advantage you have if you have a pre-existing audience before you launch, let's say, a new website, a new product, which is web-based. Particularly, let's say you're an influencer, you've built up a social following and you launch a website, you can really use that platform to grow that channel, that new channel, in a way that maybe if you're starting from scratch with no social following, you've got a big uphill battle to climb, I guess.
Absolutely. And a really fundamental point, you know, we talked about the three pillars, but even overarching all of those, ultimately, it's about trust. You know, Google asks the question, if I send a user to this particular site, are they going to have a good user experience, or are they going to bounce straight back, for example? So trust is incredibly important. And obviously, Google looks and has done historically at backlinks, as you know, in other words, other sites kind of vouching for your site by linking to you. Obviously, as time goes on, people have tried to game that. It still happens to a certain extent, but Google have obviously tried to count it wherever possible. But they're looking for other trust signals. And a really, really important one is actually how many brand searches are undertaken. Because if your company is X and people are searching for X on a regular basis, that gives Google an indication that this, you know, this is a real organization, it's bona fide. And also, let's not forget that if you search for X, and of course you will rank at the top of the page for that, if somebody comes onto your site and they were looking for your site, then they're likely to engage with it for a longer period of time. So looking at things like Google Trends and looking at how often your brand is being searched for, it is a good indication of growth in a way of not only the, you know, brand awareness, but in an indirect sense, it'll also indicate to you how well Google is likely to trust you.
So particularly if you're renaming your company, for instance, it's probably an extra challenge to get Google to continue to look upon you favorably. If people aren't they're searching for your old name, maybe.
It is. And then there's challenges around domain migration. You know, migration from one domain to another can cause multiple issues. There's almost always a disruption that can be minimized to a large extent if it's done properly. But yeah, very much so. In terms of a rebranding exercise, it does have multiple implications in terms of organic search.
So putting trust and the brand awareness piece to the side for one moment, how much of an impact does something like Core Web Vitals have on the overall SEO impact of a website?
I will always give it a mention. I think the key thing is to try to steer the client in terms of prioritization. Because for some clients, if they're in that kind of last mile, so they're really heavily competitive already, but they want to get from position 5 to position 1 for a given search term or multiple search terms, you know, if they're in that last mile, then it can be a key differentiator. And it's been well documented that lots of big organizations have spent considerable focus and time and budget on trying to improve Core Web Vitals. And as a direct consequence or not, they have often benefited in terms of search engine results page and positioning. So there is a correlation there. As I say, if you're in that last mile, it's fine, and it's something that should be a high priority. So that's certainly something I'd mark up as a high priority to clients. However, for many, many clients, there are many more fundamental issues that need to be addressed first. So there's no point in focusing on something that is a relatively small differentiator when, for example, as we mentioned before, if you've got 10,000 zombie pages, which, you know, have 10 words on them, That they should really be your focus before you were going to look into Core Web Vitals. So it really depends. It's a prioritization issue based on your particular circumstance.
So moving from the construction of the web page into the actual content on it, what advice could you give to content teams and editorial staff who maybe want to start proactively thinking about SEO as they're writing content, whether it's headlines, summaries, you know, metadata? Well, what sort of advice would you give to people who maybe don't have the SEO skill set yet?
Yeah, we've used the word fundamentals a few times during this conversation. I think it does go back to fundamentals is, you know, delivering a good user experience in terms of copywriting. It's often, you know, it can be great content, but it needs to be presented really, really well as well. So what does that mean? It means breaking paragraphs up so you haven't got long, long paragraphs, and that's often the case, unfortunately. It should be plain English. The content should be broken up, so it should be structured correctly. So there's an H1 at the top, your main title. There should be subtitles, H2s, and perhaps the subs of subs, H3s. It also goes to points like, you know, breaking up content with images, with videos. Again, we've talked about dwell time. That can really increase dwell time if you can keep that user on the page. So that those are other aspects. A really important thing to consider, actually, is often less is more. So the marketing departments can often be under pressure to put something new on the website. You know, we haven't got anything new up there this week. And there's also, of course, being the understanding historically with SEO that content, you know, regular content is a good thing in terms of organic performance. And it can be as long as it's good stuff. So it would be better if you produce one really high quality piece a month rather than actually 10 pieces within that month. That's not going to do anything for you in terms of organic performance if those 10 pieces are pretty poor. You know, it just makes busy fools of your efforts, really, if you're trying to do too much. So as I say, it's best less is more. That said, the quality and depth of the content should be better than what's out there already. So often, although it would be simplistic to say that longer content always ranks higher, often longer form content can perform better as long as it's kept of good quality, because it's simply an opportunity to talk about more, to be more expansive about the particular topic, and indeed, as you say, to include a greater variety of keywords.
I suppose being a good journalist, you're going to naturally cover, you know, relevant subtopics anyway by default of, you know, writing a good article. But if you wanted maybe some guidance on what subtopics you should cover, how would maybe you go about finding out what those subtopics should be? Is it a case of Google searching similar topics and see what else comes up? How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's good to understand if you have a particular term that you'd like to rank for. You know, a first port of call is to look at what, you know, Google is ranking already. You know, what type of content is it ranking? You know, is it very thorough? So you can look at things like word count, but also start to, you know, for example, read the top 10 articles, and that will give you an indication as to how expansive they are, what topics they cover, and also, you know, quite crucially, if you have, for example, 9 of the 10 articles are service related. So in other words, they are almost product pages. Then that gives you a strong indication that you also need to create a service / product page. If 9 out of 10 of those are blog articles, and again, that gives you an indication that the search intent, or what Google wants to return, is more informational. So it's really good to get a perspective out there. And time and time again, I see this happening is that people, you know, ignore or don't appreciate that simple rule. So it's really important to understand what's out there. You've got to then try to emulate it to a certain extent, as mentioned, but also you've got to make sure it's superior. You know, why would Google displace any of those top 10 results if you don't offer something that's superior to the user? So that's certainly another aspect. Beyond that, in terms of looking beyond the search engine results pages, you can, of course, use tools. We've mentioned Google Search Console before, which is a superb tool to use. What you'll find there is even if you don't rank for a particular or rank particularly highly for a term, you can look at how many impressions you're getting for a particular term, even if you're on page 5. It will give you an indication as to some of the keywords you could be looking at. And of course, there's lots of tools out there, SEMrush, Ahrefs, etc., that can really give you a good steer on keywords and the like, the aspects that we've just been discussing.
something that I've been delving a bit into recently is ChatGPT. It's certainly a trending topic at the moment and potentially set to revolutionize the industry, or many industries maybe. Yeah. But in terms of the SEO then, and you talked about keyword research, do you foresee something like ChatGPT and AI integration into businesses part of the core workflow in terms of editorial and just general kind of SEO strategies?
It's a good question. I think the jury's out. It's very early days at the moment. I think there was a recent poll amongst SEOs and 2/3 would not trust AI at the moment to generate content. I think it's certainly at the moment, without looking into the crystal ball too much, at the moment, I think it's there's absolutely opportunities there. I think it can inform and inspire content, but there is also risk. Quality, fact-checking, over-reliance on it, and also how Google's going to view it in terms of algorithms, you know, if it's going to start to pick up that, you know, if there are trends, if you like, or similarities in AI-generated content that it starts to dislike. So, you know, ultimately, Google wants to provide excellent content to, you know, or best-in-class content to the user. If AI can do that in time, then that's fine. But I think there is as much risk as there is reward at the moment. And the question could be, you know, can it perform better than a quality copywriter, a subject expert, a journalist, you know, i.e. humans? And at the moment, personally, I think there's still a tremendous value in those professionals rather than relying too much on AI.
Yes, certainly in my capacity as PM, it's something I use to maybe assist with some of the lower level tasks or the initial research phase, but all of it needs validation. Definitely. And yeah, you can't trust it yet. And I think we talked about trust earlier, and I think trust is a big theme there. And if you're using it to make important decisions for a company, I think you've got issues potentially coming down the line.
Very much so. You know, yeah, as you say, the word trust, and if you can't totally trust it, then, you know, what's Google thinking? Mm.
Has your workflow changed at all since the past few months, moving from 2022 into 2023? Are there any particular things? I mean, obviously, we just talked about AI and ChatGPT, but do you foresee much fundamental differences in the approach to SEO this year compared to last year?
No, I don't. I think there's many organizations that can still benefit from a focus on the fundamentals. So that very much remains the case and has done for several years. Certainly 90% of the clients I work with are not in that kind of last mile. You know, there are major aspects of their technical performance, their on-page content, and indeed sometimes their off-page issues as well. There's lots of fundamentals that really need to be tackled in one or more of those three areas. So that's really where 90% sit. Yes, of course, there are, you know, exciting developments in terms of AI that we all need to keep an eye on. There's algorithm updates that kind of happen all the time. I mean, a recent one was the helpful content update, which, as the name suggests, is pretty self-explanatory. And of course, ideally, you should have been doing that anyway. So, you know, generally, site owners shouldn't be too perturbed and worried about forthcoming algorithm updates, because if you're generally doing the right things, it shouldn't affect you too much. Now, there are the outliers, and sometimes some sites can just be unfortunate. But generally speaking, if you're performing well or you're addressing the fundamentals, that's where 90% of clients that certainly I have exposure to can benefit from and should continue to focus on, as they have done for a number of years.
In terms of non-branded keywords, maybe your competitors have, is that something that's worth chasing after to try and get that market share of the volume that they're ranking for on those particular non-branded keywords? Or is it more of a case of finding the keywords which are higher volume but maybe aren't utilized by your competitors so much, and is that the gateway to get into them, or should you go for those keywords that your competitors rank for?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I'd say on a case-by-case basis. So the first thing to do is at least have awareness of this, and that's really the starting point. So to be very much aware of what you're ranking for versus what competitors are ranking for versus what perhaps at times neither of you are ranking for. So a lot of it should be based on your strategy. You know, do you have a strategy of nurturing people with sort of top of the funnel stuff, and then eventually they might convert after a nurturing process? You know, often the most competitive keywords are the ones where, you know, it's buy X or buy Y, because of course you know that they're further down that funnel. And that can be incredibly competitive. You could have a strategy where you want to introduce people to a much broader topic, and kind of they'll filter down the funnel as time goes on. So, for example, you may sell fitness equipment, and you actually start off by just talking to people, blog articles about the benefits of exercise. You're unlikely to get a conversion in the near future from that, but eventually that's not only helping to fill that funnel, if you like, but it's also raising brand awareness. So as I say, it's about understanding what you do, don't rank for, what the competitors ditto, do and don't rank for, and then understanding how this targeting should fit into your overall strategy.
And there are two different approaches, I suppose, to that. One is ignore what your competitors do. It doesn't matter. Just focus on what you do well at and hone in on that. And the other side is, you know, trying to take their market share on certain things. So I suppose there's not a right or wrong answer on that anyway.
Yeah, take the best bits of what they do, but don't ever lose your own identity.
Yeah. The other thing you mentioned was around the rebranding and the impact on SEO in terms of domain authority. And I suppose if a organization wanted to rebrand and they said, no, that in terms of their strategy, it was absolutely imperative that they do this, what would be your initial recommendations for that? How would you work with an organization to minimize the impact of SEO?
Yeah, great question. So you would firstly look at the key performers, the pages that are really bringing in the traffic for you. So those need to be preserved. It makes good sense to do so. And you'd be surprised when that sometimes doesn't happen. So first and foremost, you know, get an understanding of what's performing for you, because the old Pareto thing, you know, often there will be a small percentage of the pages that are contributing a significant amount of the traffic. So make sure those are preserved. Likewise, in terms of backlinks, understand where those backlinks are going into. And they will often be a diverse bunch. They're going into lots of different places on the site. But again, there might be pages that you didn't really think were particularly important, but they've got 300 backlinks to them. So actually, if you just cut that particular page, then unfortunately all of the value of those backlinks go as well. So really it's a case of pulling out lots of data from the likes of Google Search Console, from the likes of something like Ahrefs, Google Analytics as well, you know, fusing all of that data together and then making data-led decisions about which pages should stay and which pages should go. So that's really the very broad approach. There are some more specifics that need to be looked into as well. You need to be aware of the new domain's history. Has it had a tarnished reputation in the past? If it was used for nefarious purposes 10 years ago, Google and other search engines might still remember that reputation. So before you were to adopt that new domain, it's important to do your due diligence on the history of that. And there's a few other aspects as well. But as I say, I think those are the main two things. And as you mentioned at the beginning, you know, if you're rebranding, there isn't a choice. It's not a case that the tail should wag the dog and you don't rebrand because you don't like the new domain or whatever, you don't want to change domain. However, what I would say, if it's not a rebranding exercise, and you're just thinking of changing the domain just for the sake of it, some kind of a marketing exercise, if you like, just be very wary of that, because there invariably will be some disruption in terms of the traffic. And is that really worth it, especially if organic returns so highly for you, if it's so important to you, is it worth the disruption? And that's definitely a conversation to have if it's not an overarching rebranding exercise.
And what is the role of subdomains versus root domains? Is there a time and place to put content on subdomains, or is it really losing all the value from the root domain authority?
By and large, it loses the value. Generally, Google have said that they treat the two as separate entities. There was a hint recently that they might look across that, and that might not be an absolute black and white case. But by and large, I think you need to have a strong argument for a subdomain before you were to go down that route. That's not to say that they're all bad or shouldn't be done, but by and large, as you say, there is a lot of power, if you like, in that main domain. And of course, apart from the SEO benefits, you know, the opportunity to cross-pollinate, if you are on that main domain and you can navigate through as a user to various aspects. Some people get very trigger happy with creating subdomains for X, Y, and Z. When they're just not needed, they could simply fall under that main domain.
And touching on that, I guess it's a good segue into, you know, what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when implementing SEO strategies? Is it impatience? Is it anything else? What are some of your things that you've encountered?
So firstly, I'd say don't be scared of SEO. You know, embrace it, feel positive about it. Enjoy the process. As I said, it's highly rewarding. It's really engaging. It's good fun. So don't be scared about making the mistake. And actually, probably the biggest mistake is to do nothing. You know, if you take an ostrich tactic, you know, don't ever audit your site, don't ever do any house cleaning, those kind of things, that's not good. So to do something is better than nothing. So mistakes, assuming you can do just one thing, goes back to the, you know, there's rarely just one smoking gun. So just doing one thing, focusing on your on-page optimization and wondering why things aren't working, getting too narrow-minded about focusing on one particular area, because the more you can throw at it, the better in terms of high and medium priority fixes across the board in the three pillars that we talked about. Not knowing the full picture is not a good thing. Thinking back to that pie chart, how many you might think that 50% of your pages are good. Does Google think that? Is that actually the case? You know, you need an honest perspective in terms of what Google's got indexed and is it good or isn't it? And there's numbers there to back that up. As I say, you can merge different sets of data from the likes of Google Search Console, from GA, something like Ahrefs, etc. You can fuse all of those together to help you make the decisions about what's performing and what's not. Other aspects, deploying resource in the wrong order is not great. So you might, for example, use Ahrefs or SEMrush to audit the site, and those kind of automated audits are good to some extent. And that might flag up that you have 500 meta descriptions that are missing. And that's fine. And ideally, you'd address those potentially in time, but it's not actually going to move the needle. So deploying, you know, spending too much time in the wrong area, or spending time in the wrong area, full stop, is not a good thing. Allowing technical limitations to undermine the content effort is another one. So you might have fantastic content. As I say, if there's technical issues, then that's really, really going to pull you back. And then the final one, just going back to content, you know, if it's thin, if it's repetitive, if it's just not adding much value, there's no point in doing that on a regular basis just to tick the box that you've created some content. You know, it might keep some stakeholders happy within the organization, but ultimately one really, really high quality article is better than 10 poor ones.
Yeah.
So there's a few mistakes.
Yeah.
I could probably list 100 more. But you know, and again, that's why something like an audit is really, really beneficial, because you get that very broad perspective.
And it comes back to the point of just making great content that's unique, comprehensive, and that people want to read and come back and share, et cetera, et cetera. It's easier said than done, I guess, than the actual practice. But,
and cheaper said than done as well, because yeah. You know, the very best content has, you know, great video, it's got infographics, and that's not always something that as a marketer you're able to do very easily. But again, you know, one good one beats 10 average ones. So, you know, if it helps consolidate, you know, don't pay a copywriter times 10 to create, you know, stuff. Don't spend time yourself building 10 pages. You know, build one that's more expansive, more immersive than those 10 that you might have created before.
Excellent. Tom, is there anything else that maybe you'd like to touch upon, which you think is a gaping hole in our SEO discussion?
No, I think it's been a really interesting discussion. I would say if you've got listeners there that are thinking about engaging with an agency or a consultant, you should be looking for a partnership. So you will probably have a heavier reliance on that agency or consultant at the beginning. They can give you that broad perspective on your site. They can give you that in-depth perspective on your site. But as time goes on, they should be handing over more and more to you. They should ideally be educating you, guiding you, empowering you to do more. So the best kind of agency-client relationship is one where there's a real partnership and a real evolution as time goes on in terms of that balance of you know, teaching and learning. So, you know, it can be quite difficult at times to know what to do. But as I say, engaging with the right organisation that works on this every day is a great first step, because you can do some things fairly effectively in terms of SEO with some of the tools that I've mentioned. But ultimately, thankfully, from my point of view at the moment, you know, it's not all machine driven. You know, you can run an Ahrefs audit, for example, you can get 100% on it, but your traffic might be tanking. You know, it's only one perspective. You know, do you know how to interpret the data that's coming out of Google Search Console? Possibly not. So there is a great deal of value in employing the professionals from the onset. But at the same time, slowly but surely, you should hopefully become more confident, more informed, in order to take over more of that day-to-day SEO activity as time goes on.
So the power of the human and human relationships.
Very much so. Yeah, it goes back to our earlier point on AI. I think the human still wins at the moment.
Well, I think that's a good point to end the discussion on. And Tom, thank you very much for speaking to us on this podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to give a like and a review on your preferred podcast platform and share with your colleagues. It's really appreciated and helps ensure the future of this podcast.